Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. December 1st is World AIDS Day. The theme this year is getting to zero. UNAIDS says new infections are down by 35% since 2000, and AIDS-related deaths are fallen by 42% since the peak in 2004. However, a new report from UN agencies found that AIDS is now the leading cause of death for Africa's teenagers. The report says that half of the world's HIV-positive teens between the ages of 15 and 19 live in South Africa, Nigeria, Kenya, Mozambique, Tanzania, and India. And that only one in three of the 2.6 million children under the age of 15 living with HIV are on treatment. Experts say it is a huge setback in the fight against the virus. We will discuss this and more on the show today. Joining us via phone from Nairobi, Kenya, is Victor Digolo, director of MAIGO, Men Against AIDS Youth Group in Nairobi. Victor, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It is good to have you with us. Let me remind our listeners, if you'd like to participate in the show with your comment or you have any questions, you can call 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. You can ask your international operator to reverse the charges. You can also email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com. So World AIDS Day is currently being marked in Harare, Zimbabwe, which is hosting ICASA, the 18th International Conference on AIDS and Sexually Transmitted Infections in Africa. And the conference will go on until December 4th. Now, about 4,000 people are attending the meeting right now. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The HIV-AIDS epidemic is 34 years old. It's estimated 37 million people are currently living with the disease. Since 1981, many millions have died from the illness. Most of them have been in sub-Saharan Africa. But much progress has been made in recent years, both in treatment and prevention. For example, new infections have declined by 35% since 2000, and deaths have fallen by more than 40% since the peak year of 2004. That good news is due in large part to the fact that 15 million people are now receiving antiretroviral therapy. Among those attending ICASA 2015 in Harare is Anurita Baines, HIV-AIDS advisor for Eastern and Southern Africa for UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund.
The broader theme of ICASA is around science, leadership, political will. A theme for us, and particularly those of us who've been working in the HIV-AIDS movement for many years, is really to look at the progress we've made, taking stock, and also looking at where the gaps are.
She says UNICEF programs are geared toward the UNAIDS and World Health Organization goal of scaling up treatment.
Particularly in Eastern Southern Africa, we've made tremendous progress in scaling up access to treatment. So now 3 in 5 HIV-positive pregnant women are receiving treatment to prevent new infections in infants and children, and also for their own health, to keep them healthy. So that's a great news story, particularly around the first decade of life.
Baines says, however, that more needs to be done in treating kids for HIV.
We're still seeing treatment inequity among children. So those who are born HIV positive, 70% of them are still not getting treatment. It's a major treatment gap. We're seeing progress for adults in Africa, but children are being left behind, and we need to acknowledge that and do something about it.
She blames the gap on a lack of diagnostic equipment and tools to test children.
Many of these infants are being infected during the breastfeeding period, so they're not HIV positive when they're born, and so we need to make sure we keep their mothers connected to facilities and to treatment sites and retain them in the health system so that they come back and that their children are tested.
The UNICEF advisor says stigma continues to be a problem so many years into the epidemic.
Even if a woman is HIV positive and she knows her status, she may not have disclosed to her partner, to her husband or her family and close friends. And so there's still sort of this vexing issue around stigma and making sure that there's a sense that there's not only support, but treatment services that can improve people's lives, including the lives of children.
The ICASA conference is also taking a close look at how HIV/AIDS is affecting adolescents.
AIDS is the number one cause of death among adolescents in Africa, and in the last 15 years, AIDS-related deaths have tripled among adolescents. And the majority of these deaths are happening in Africa, 85% of them. This is the age group who are being left behind. And if we don't get them services to prevent new infections and connect them to treatment, many of them are going to die.
Most of the new adolescent infections are among girls. Sexual violence and gender inequality play a big role in that. Most of the funding for scaling up treatment and prevention comes from PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, and the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. Bain says about 15 years ago, it cost $10,000 to treat a person for HIV/AIDS for 12 months. Now, due to fixed-dose drug combinations and generic medications, the cost is down to about $100 per person per year. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And that was Joe DiCapua reporting. Victor DiColo, again, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, you heard the report. Today is World AIDS Day. Some statistics are good. Others are disconcerting, especially when it pertains to adolescents. First of all, let me get your take on this day, World AIDS Day. What does this mean to you as someone who works in the fight against HIV/AIDS?
Okay, to me, as a young lady organization working with the LGBTI, this day means a lot to us because we come ready to share our experience as MSM who are living with HIV, and also to interact with community, to share our preference for the loved one we lost, and also to support the people who are living with HIV, and also to support the people who are still negative on how best they can live positively without getting the infection or affecting other people. And for those who are living with HIV, on how best they can live positively, as mostly Mega works with adolescents, girls, and boys. And how do we come out strongly, and how do we make our voice visible for the community to understand our issues?
And Victor, can you give us a sense of what you do with your organization, MyGo, Men Against AIDS Youth Group?
MyGo is a LGBT-led organization, and mostly we work with MSM and gay, bisexual men and transgender. And MyGo, we have five thematic areas, and one is health, second one is policy, third one is research and documentation, fourth one is economic empowerment, and fifth one is OD. So in health, basically, we try to reach the gatekeepers. These gatekeepers, we reach them through dialogue meetings, sensitization forums, because we realize that majority of the youth are in closet because of stigma and discrimination. So how best do we have these clear policies in the county government where adolescent people have their voice, where the systems are already there in the public setup, where adolescent girls and boys can come and access healthcare? So we have this dialogue with this season with our parents for the LGBTI who are now like the role models who can talk openly about sexuality and gender and issue of identity. And we also work with the police because police mostly arrest the adolescent girls and boys when they are caught with the condoms, when they are caught at night, because majority of the adolescents, they engage in sex work. So when they are arrested, majority of them, maybe they left their drugs back home, they don't have their drugs. So we sensitize the police on how best they can handle the situation. We also do radio advocacy because we use our local language to reach this community, because we realize that majority of adolescent people have been chased out of school because of their sexual orientation. So they don't understand English very much, so we use our local language on issue on SOGI for them to understand, and also we do referral. We also do moonlight activities whereby we test, we enroll, and we also treat and we do follow-up on those who are living HIV positive, and we also give nutrition supplements for those who are weak. We have monthly meetings, and we also do peer education, which is known to unknown. We have peers on the ground who know their peers in the community. So we have these peers to get us, other MSM to come on board. We also train health service providers on how best they can give comprehensive and quality services to the youth. Because in Kenya right now, if you're a youth and you get maybe an STI, they'll tell you to come maybe with your boyfriend or girlfriend. And if maybe you're an adolescent person, you may be a gay person or just adolescent girl, and you're a sex worker, you can't come up maybe with your sexual partners. So we train these health service providers to give that opportunity for this person who has come for health services to be treated, rather than waiting for maybe sexual partners who maybe they just met for maybe a nightstand and they never meet again. So we train them on those issues. And also we give loans, because majority of adolescents have dropped out of school. So as MIGO, we train youth on money management, entrepreneurship, then we give them seed fund. So this seed fund, they can do basic business for them to get income, because we realize that majority of these people, they came out of school, they have engaged in sex work, they stay in one house, so many people. So the only thing they can do is sex work. And in this sex work, sometimes they need to bargain for safer sex. So it's higher the money, no protection. Lesser the money, there's protection. So they go for the higher the money, no protection. So as MIGO, we give them seed funds to at least to have alternative life, for them to have a healthy life. Lastly, we build their capacity through trainings, through referral, and also through linkage to other opportunities and through other microfinance.
Okay. This is a lot that you do through your program. Now, let me ask you this. We hear a lot about a stigma and discrimination, which is one issue when people have HIV. Now, the LGBTQ plus community is one community that has there have been many, many reports about discrimination against this community. Now, how do you reconcile this if you have someone who is HIV plus and is in the LGBTQ plus community? How are you able to address this issue, especially in a context, in an African context, where we understand, for them, some of us who are African, we know that in some cases it's very difficult to still accept the idea of the community, you know, and this is a reality that we cannot shy away from.
True, very true, very true. I agree with you. So as MIGO, what I've been doing, we have monthly health talk sessions to different topics. And as I said, we do peer education approach for our community. So we have LGBTI who are LGBTI class. So we have support group for this community. So they meet every month. So during this support group, we talk about disclosure, coming out, various issues. So this is the space whereby we also engage now with the guardians. We engage with the families, and then we have these case studies, and we present them in maybe during maybe public events. And also sometimes we even go to the family members and call them when already an LGBT person club has agreed to share this information out. Because it would be pointless to talk to an LGBT plus on his sexuality, on his status, without giving them that power as a person. So as MIGO, we give them that, we build the capacity. We give them support, we give them strength, we give them courage, so that when they come out, once now they are confident to share the status of the sexuality, now we roll it out to the families, now we roll it out to real advocacy, because we can't do advocacy, without data. And we need people to say, this is who I am, I'm LGBTI class, and I'm facing this challenge. So as MIGO, we have been using this monthly meeting support to advocate for these issues in these meetings, and LGBT comes out and then use this platform also to now challenge and also influence change in the society, community and society, because you have adolescent people who are on drugs and they keep the drugs in the office. So sometimes the person is sick at home. No one will know maybe they are where they stay, so they won't adhere to the drugs. So it comes back to us. How responsible are we as a community to make sure that our children are on care and they adhere to care? So that is how we have been doing it. In person first, person reflection, person thinking, we influence it. Now then we help it to the community and society. Now doing the advocacy with the county health directors, with the family members, just to support this person for him to stand. But sometimes, MSMs, I mean, LGBT still triple stigma, is that LGBT is now positive, so it takes them time to come out. So we have challenges, and also have like positive feedback from the families and also from the society.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Victor. So what we'll do is take a quick break and come back to continue the discussion. But before we do that, I spoke to recently, actually, the World Health Organization announced, released new recommendations, which says everyone who has HIV should be offered antiretroviral drugs as soon as possible after diagnosis. For more clarifications.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, how do you feel about that? Let me have your reaction very quickly.
I feel very good, and especially even today, our T-shirt for SA Today is about treat and roll. We have 90-90. You test, you treat, and you suppress the viral load. So mm-hmm. actually, as MIGO through its alliance, we have been advocating for this issue. Mm-hmm. And today, even in our T-shirt, that's our message for today, World AIDS Day. And we roll it out from next week to make sure it's being done. And I'm very happy during the ICASA, the WHO has said it should be done in all countries.
Yes. Okay. So now for more clarification, I spoke to Dr. Luis Lures. He's a Deputy Executive Director Program of the Joint United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS, UNAIDS. Take a listen and then we'll come back and talk some more. Okay. Don't go away. Take a listen to the interview.
Okay. Thank you.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
The recommendation by the World Health Organization to treat all people who are diagnosed with HIV. Could you please explain this to us further?
Yes, basically, what we are going for now is if you get tested HIV positive, you should be treated regardless of the time of the infection. You know what I mean? Just to give you another perspective, what's different now? Before, we were treating people that were HIV positive, but only when they have in a certain stage of the infection that was more advanced. And then you'd start to treat. We are using a complementary additional test to measure the immunity of the person. Okay?
Yes.
When HIV had impacted the immunity to a certain level, we were starting treatment. That was before. Now, we are starting treating in any phase since the person is diagnosed with HIV.
Now, when someone starts the treatment right away, are there any concerns at all about drug resistance down the line?
There will be always some concern about drug resistance as we treat HIV, as we treat many other diseases, you know? And that's sometimes very much related to the time that a person is exposed to a single drug or to a combination of drugs. right? But the evidence that we have today, Lino, and is a very large evidence after 3 decades of AIDS and at least 15 years that we are treating people, is that resistance is not an impediment for expansion of treatment. You know, the benefit of treating more and the earlier, they are much bigger than the risk of resistance.
As we increase the number of people who will need to have access to these drugs, what about the general issue of access to treatment in some developing countries? Even people who need the drugs don't have access to the drug. How do we ensure that there is more drugs that are available, given that more people will be on drugs?
This is actually the biggest challenge of all, is the access. Is, in a nutshell, the way that I put it, Lindo, we have the science today to bring this epidemic down. Okay?
Okay.
The issue is to make sure that people access science. Exactly what you said. In the case of treatment here, we do have the tools. But do people access the tools? And this is where the challenge is. As you know very well, it's a big achievement of the AIDS response, of government, civil society, the UN, that we have 15 million people on the treatment today. Okay?
Okay.
But you'd need at least to double that to be on the target. You know? At least to double. And there is an enormous challenge. Now, what we have accumulated during the last 15 years, I would need to reach in a much shorter time. What we say, according to our own evidence and data, that needs to happen in the next 5 years. You know, and that is a major challenge. How to do it? I think I would give you just a few, three major directions that I think we need to take, or things that need to happen. First of all, we need very much a renewal of the political commitment and leadership to AIDS, because people do not get on treatment just because the drugs exist. If there is no political leadership that push for that and making resources come before that, that makes services available mainly to the most vulnerable, because the last ones on the list here will be all the sex workers or the young women in Africa, gay men everywhere, intravenous drug use in Eastern Europe, migrants and so. You need political leadership to make sure that these people you access treatment to, because these are the most difficult to access. The second point, and this I think we have a lot of things in favor to it, we need to change the way that we are delivering services. You know, services, they need to go close to where people are. You cannot expect that a person living in a rural settlement in Africa, you need to travel maybe for one day to reach a clinic. That will never happen. That's not sustainable. That will not, you may have this person one day and then you lost follow-up. Now we need to make sure that services go closer to people, mainly to young people that do not come as regular to health facilities. And the third one is in terms of pricing. We need to make the drugs affordable. And not only the drugs, the diagnostic too, the AIDS testing, for instance. And this is another major issue. We need to bring the prices down as we did in the past.
So, Victor, thank you again for joining us. Now, you heard this interview, in-depth interview I had with Dr. Luis Lures, talking about the treat all recommendation by WHO. He mentioned some very, very important points. Of course, everything he said was very important. One of the things he talked about, access to treatment, which is a reality. A lot of people still don't have access to treatment. Now they're saying everyone who is HIV positive has to be on drugs. How do you feel about this in terms of your experience with the people that you work with? How challenging is it to have access to treatment? And are you concerned at all that that might affect your work and those who need it?
Actually, I have to experience, and one is so current, like for even for today, I was in the committee for the World AIDS Day in Kisumu County, and apparently even today we could not even test our community because there were no test kits. So I was just wondering if we are being told to test and then we treat. And even today for the World AIDS Day, the National AIDS Control Council, NASCOP, that is in Kenya, didn't even have enough testing kits for everyone in the country. So how do we test people? Because you can't enroll somebody on care if they have not been tested. And again, the question comes in whereby there have been this issue of discussion whereby, like, it's going to be expensive for Kenya to enroll people who test positive despite their CD4 count. Maybe they want to wait and see if it's 350. So I feel we need, I don't know if this is advocacy from the international level or national level, because WHO has said it, which is very much okay, but as a country, people are saying Kenya can't afford people in ART despite their CD4 count. So it's very tricky for us, because as we are doing advocacy at regional level, but we don't know what happens at the national level, because these things need to merge from the grassroots, regional, national, and international. So by the time WHO is saying that, maybe we need to have, like, maybe clear policies, clear systems on how best are we going to use this service delivery. Because things can be in policies, can be on paper, but now the actual service delivery is not accurate. And today I saw it, and it was so embarrassing, and it was so challenging for everyone who was giving testing and counseling for everyone during this World AIDS Day for today.
Hmm. See, that's very interesting there. And one of the things that Dr. Luis Lourdes mentioned is the political leadership has to kick in. From your experience, how is that working? Not to talk about what the government is doing specifically, but in general, in your advocacy work, how do people respond to some of the issues that you bring up and you advocate for?
I do think 90% political leadership influence change, and they are the ones who can influence these policies, because however much we say we have to do this, we have to go back to the parliament, for example, it has to pass through the bills, to the Senate, to the chamber. So political leadership is very important, and most if the political leadership are so like-minded, it is very, very, very important for them to influence change. So I think we need to maybe adopt a policy or a system whereby how do we reach these people who are so like-minded to influence change, because they are the last people who have this, who can influence change. Mm-hmm. They are the ones to say yes, no, or wait. So I think we need to have a system whereby it's run across from the grassroots, regional, national, then when it goes up to the national level, we need political who can influence change.
Okay.
In all the systems of the government.
Now, Victor, we're going to wrap up very soon, but I wanted to get your take on this issue about young teenagers being dying more from AIDS than anything else in Africa. How do you feel about this? What do you think this is happening? Why are the youth dying so much or being affected so much? What is lacking there, very quickly?
Yeah, I have three concerns about this issue, and actually I want to talk through experience. One is, we have people who have been born with HIV, and some of them, their parents died, they lived with their guardians, maybe are so old. So these kids have never been told about their HIV status.
Okay.
These kids have been told the drugs
quickly.
And the drugs for blood.
Quickly. Go ahead.
Yes. Now I think there's no information on the grassroots. People are on denial, and there are a lot of stigma, and there's a lot of hate, and there's a lot of gender-based violence,
okay.
And youth feel stigmatized, so coming out is a challenge.
Okay, Victor Digolo, thank you so much for joining us today. And Victor Digolo is director of Maigo Men Against Youth Group in Kenya. I'm your host, Linor Mudu, in Washington. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day. Thank you for joining us.